Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 250th edition of New Mainers Speak. This has been a weekly and later a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the 7 years this show has run, I have visited with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, this project has come to its natural end. This one-hour special broadcast is the final celebration of New Mainers Speak. I believe that just like beginnings, endings are very important. Beyond the amazing guests from 77 countries, I've also felt very privileged to get to know the staff at WMPG and many of the other volunteers who create for the station just for the pure love of making radio. One such former WMPG host is Ann Hallward. When I started at WMPG in 2014, she was already an established host of a show I regularly listened to called Safe Space Radio, a show about things we would struggle with less if we could talk about more. Being a social worker, I enjoyed every episode of her show. You too can find her substantial work and courageous conversations at safespaceradio.com. Anne's a psychiatrist who practices in Portland, Maine, and during COVID from her home, like so many of us. In fact, we're recording this interview today from our separate homes. Thank you for joining us today. And Anne, my Canadian friend, welcome to New Mainers Speak. I am so grateful you're here with me to make this final retrospective episode.
Kate, thank you for the invitation. I'm so grateful that I am Canadian, so I actually get to be part of your show, having heard about it and talked to you about it for so many years. And thank you, because you've created something so beautiful here.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to have this conversation with you.
Well, since this is the 250th show, and effectively your last, at least in this iteration, would you tell me the story? How did New Mainers Speak come into the world? How did the idea form? And as you were starting the show, what were your most heartfelt dreams for it?
Well, in some ways, this is a question I've answered a lot, but I've given it more thought recently, and there's more to it. So in the 100th show, I kind of give the basics of who I spoke with and how the show came to be at the station. But on a deeper level, it started with just kind of who I am. I was raised in a family by parents that had lived and worked and met each other abroad. And while I was American born, our house was filled with foreign languages and foreign artifacts that I loved, and a lot of respect for people from all over the world. And I just thought, when you grow up, that's what you do. And then I grew up and it wasn't what I did. I was raising my children in Kennebunk, Maine, which is known for being a pretty white town. And so later I had some time because my kids were getting older and I have more and more wiggle room. I thought, this is a good chance to do something different. I thought, well, I've always wanted to do more audio. So I had heard about WMPG and it just fired. And I called and they were about to start a training and I was in, you know, it's $25, 6 hours of training, 3 sessions. And I thought, why not? I'll give it a try. So I went to the station and I said, you have a fantastic mission of putting the microphone into the hands of people who don't usually get a shot at it. I said, what would you like more of? And they needed more immigrant voice. They constantly were recruiting people, but things change quickly in immigrants' lives, especially when they first arrive. They might have lots of time while they're waiting for a work permit. And then once that happens, they're not available. So we sat down together and developed this show, what would work. And I said, oh yes, I'd be willing to make the connections and go to their houses and pre-meet with them and bring them to the studio if they need. And Lisa's like, you're on. You're serious? You're on. So that's what we did. We just built it on the same format as Husky Tunes, where they have the students and they don't have to learn everything. They get to come in and just try it. And so we thought this might be a good way to have people come in and just try it. And with every interview I've done, I've made sure to mention to the guests on my show, hey, guess what? You can do this too. It's your community radio station too. So that was part of the mission. And several people have gone through the training and actually broadcast on the air. And maybe the greatest lesson of all came from the program director at WMPG, who said to me early on, "You will make mistakes. We expect that. Just keep going." And I thought, oh, well, if I can make mistakes, then I can try this. And so I feel like that gave me permission to do this.
That's so wonderful. That's how it happened for me too. Community radio is really open to everyone who wants to do it. You too could do this. It's so fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So on the one hand, WMPG wanted more voices from the immigrant community, and you wanted to express this part of yourself. Were there other hopes you have about cultural attitudes toward immigration or assumptions we make about who immigrants are that you hope to have an impact on?
Are you saying you think people make assumptions about who immigrants are?
You know, occasionally. I've noticed that, you know, every now and then.
I thought it was just inane that almost everything I would see about immigrants would represent Mexicans. And I thought, that's funny. I've never met a Mexican. I don't think that's who our neighbors are. What if, when we're talking about immigration, we could have a better, clearer, more accurate picture in our minds of, in Maine, who our largest immigration groups are?
And who are they? Who are they, Kate?
You, baby. Canadians. And so I went out there in the world and found anyone who was willing to come on the show and spoke with them about what they wanted to talk about. And so in the process of the 7 years, I've met all kinds of people, and they've gotten to talk about what they want. And I hope that that has changed some minds, has helped people to understand who their neighbors are. We don't all have neighbors we can meet. You know, in Portland, there's a good chance you could meet a neighbor who's foreign born, but not in every town. And so my hope was that with New Mainers Speak, people could meet one another.
That makes so much sense. I was wondering if it's not only that as your listeners, we get to understand more about what it's like to come from Burundi or the Congo or Iraq or Somalia, but also we get to see our own home through their eyes.
Oh, yes.
And what kind of feedback over the years, 7 years is a great run for a show, what kind of feedback have you gotten about whether people feel like they really have enlarged their idea of who their neighbors are? Do you feel like that's been able to happen?
Oh, Anne, if you would have asked me that question a week ago, I would have said something like, I don't know, you just put it out there in the world, it's radio, and you don't know where it goes. But over the past week or so, I have gotten a deluge of love. I've gotten emails and messages on Facebook and messages from other DJs who find out New Mainers Speak is coming to a close, and people have been so generous. And I can't tell you how meaningful that's been to me. This has just been a really big week of hearing from so many people. The highest praise in radio, of course, is hearing that you've created a driveway moment. And I had somebody tell me that she's spent a lot of time in her car, in her driveway, hearing the end of interviews, or from others who think this is what community radio is all about. And I really kind of expected when I started that I also might get hate mail or pushback from different parts of the community. I'm very happy to say that I have only received one negative email in this whole time. The rest really has been so well received. I feel very fortunate. Yeah.
I imagine, Kate, and of course I don't know, but I imagine that maybe that has to do with the way that you do this show, which is that you haven't done it with an axe to grind or with an agenda that you drive at. But it has been such a wholehearted, relational approach to getting to know real people. Luckily, that doesn't trigger as much hate as some of the other things do. Maybe there's a lesson for all of us in this moment in history in what you've just said, which is if we relate wholeheartedly one-on-one to each other, maybe that begins to undermine some of the deep divisions. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's probably true. With each and every guest, I have said, is there something you've been dying to say so we make sure we get it said while you have the microphone? And is there anything you would rather not talk about? Because it's only half an hour and we can easily not talk about your unsure status as a citizen or your family back home who you don't want to implicate. So for starters, I haven't pushed them into places where they don't want to be. I've intentionally kept them from having to do that because the point of this is just to visit and share and introduce one to one's neighbors. It's more like having a cup of coffee together and just visiting, which we always did before the show, to get to know one another. And so we had established a rapport and a relationship at a coffee shop or their home or their place of work or just on the phone. And then when we got there, we had the joy of being in the studio and just letting things happen. I think people are generally nervous at first, but you sit down and you start visiting. It's two people. You kind of forget the microphones are there and you sink into a more comfortable conversation. And then at the end, we enjoy a little music together. And right now we're going to take a short break. I want to play for you a song that Sanem Aslan shared with me in 2014 from her native Turkey. It's become one of my favorites over the years too. Excellent for kitchen dancing. This is Tarkan singing Dudu. Ağlamadan ayrılık olmaz. Hatıralar uslu durmaz. Kalanlar gideni gönlünde taşır. Aşk sevene yük olmaz. Biz böyle bilir böyle yaşarız.
Sütü gibi tertemiz Du du du du dilleri lıkır lıkır İçimeli gözleri derya deniz
As you reflect back now on 250 interviews with people from over 70 countries around the world, it's wow. Are there life lessons that you take away?
Yeah. I wish each of us knew how to treasure all that's available to us in our lives. We have such richness all around us, and sometimes I think we don't even see it. You know, every week I was reminded that it's hard to appreciate what you have if you don't know what life could be like without free speech, not having access to schools or jobs or even just trying to raise a family while being persecuted for your religion. I think it's a little bit like being sick. If you've never been sick, can you really appreciate being healthy? Say yes to invitations to try new things. Just last week, my guest Elise Malongi was talking about taking up downhill skiing. And, you know, she's a mom and her kids are skiing, so this is how she's going to be with them. Way to adapt. She's from Congo. Another life lesson, don't be so easily discouraged. I can get kind of jaded sometimes and think there's no way out and forget about it kind of thing. And I've learned a lot more about holding on to hope, holding on to your long view and telling yourself this can happen. Keep working at it. Be optimistic and just keep going until you succeed. It's called hard work. I know it seems so obvious, but it's a key ingredient to resilience. And in the concrete lessons category, I have learned that we make a nice symbiosis. Immigrants really need a safe space to land, a place to live and love and work. And we Mainers really need younger citizens to work in all kinds of industries, pay taxes, send their kids to school, start businesses, and just generally enrich communities with vibrancy and diversity. It's a real win-win. Maine's a good place to be an immigrant, by and large.
Yeah, are there other ways that you have come to look at your own community here in Maine and seen it in a different light because of listening to so many people who have arrived here from elsewhere?
I would say that yes. One such is through parenting. I think everyone does the very best they can as parents. And sometimes we don't know what's even our cultural norm as parents. I think in working with people from other cultures, especially more collectivistic cultures, they're not nearly as individualistic. So when we're all about the individual, we're all about goals and striving and being number one. And that's not everyone's goal. Some communities, their goal is to be connected, to be kind, to serve one another. And so then they raise their kids very differently. I was talking to a friend from Congo just yesterday, and she was explaining to me what they were talking about at the dinner table with her children. And they were talking about someone they had known, and they asked everyone at the table to go around and say five things they remembered about that person. And they celebrated their love for that person. And I thought, that's pretty cool dinner conversation in my book. Cherishing, savoring, valuing the memories that the other person brings to the table and helping that person remember, oh yeah, she did do that or he did do that, you know. And in a very different situation, but over food once again, I was invited to an iftar at the end of Ramadan at one of my former guests' homes. And we sat on the floor and it was quite exciting. I'd never imagined I would have been invited to an iftar with a family. I never saw that coming in my life. And I just loved every minute of it. There was joyful conversation and people reaching over each other and passing things and ripping the bread with their hands. And it was just a very different way of doing things. And the children were so engaged in the mealtime and the event. I am sure it will yield wonderful young adults.
What is iftar?
It's the word in Arabic for breaking fast. So when you are doing 16 hours of fasting during the daylight, if you're Muslim, during Ramadan, when the sun sets, you can have food again. And so that's an iftar.
Oh, thank you. What an honor to be invited and included in that way, Kate.
And I can't even believe how lucky I am. I feel like I did something right in the last life to deserve this one. I had no idea how rich this experience would be for me and for my family. You know, when I started this, my children were both in public school, and I'd come back from my Sunday interview, and I called it my Church of the First Amendmentists. And I'd sit down at the table and tell all about, you know, someone who had survived the genocide in Rwanda, or someone who had come from a place where the stone mountain lights on fire without striking a match, where its natural gas just seeps out in Azerbaijan. Every week it was something totally different. And they went from having, you know, little complaints that they were working on to saying to each other, first world problem, first world problem. Because it puts things in perspective. If you've left a war-torn country, if you left not knowing if your brother was alive or not, but the family had to flee anyway and finding him 10 years later, what did that do to your family? What did that anxiety do to your body? How many years off your life will you have due to the stress hormones that were pulsing through your veins for those 10 years or more?
One of the things that I learned in my experience of interviewing refugees and asylum seekers specifically was the extent of the torture that people had survived, and among the women especially the extent of sexual assault and rape. I really had no idea that so many of the immigrants here in Maine had endured so much suffering en route to getting here. And what did you learn about both sort of how to talk about that? Those are things that we consider unspeakable. They're so devastating. But also about how people rebuild after things like that. How do people come back from that?
I have about 8 ways I want to answer that. I would start with, it's a little scary. And we can do hard things. I am a social worker, so I did get some training in graduate school in standards of ways to approach tough conversations, and certainly practice. But I also think one really important thing was just connecting as a human. Everyone's opinion and experience is valid and important. And so I think starting from that place, there's a shared human connection, which helps. I want to say that one of my guests that spoke beautifully to this was from Rwanda, and her name is Nancy Kamaliza. She talks about how this systemic violence rattled everyone. And even though she was not aware of what happened because she was so young when it happened, the genocide in Rwanda, then all these children had parents who were grief-stricken and sometimes vacant, sometimes dead, sometimes left. The pressure was so high and they were just trying to put food on the table. So their whole lives, they wore this heavy blanket. And when she got here and looked at other 27-year-olds, she was like, wait a minute, what's different about these people? Why are they so carefree? Why are they so free to focus on these other things? I feel behind. And then she's like, why? I am carrying such a heavy burden. And so she had such beautiful insights. I would direct people back to that for lots more on grief and trauma. And sometimes it takes a long time before people want to unpack it. And I have been very careful to not unpack it with people who don't want to unpack it. I have had several people come to me and say, I would like to talk about this. So then the game's on. Marielle Uimana wanted to talk about this because her children were coming of age and they were asking why they didn't have any grandparents or any aunts and uncles. And both she and her husband lost their whole families. And she had to figure out how she was going to talk to her children about it. So here people are at 30-ish. And they just suppressed it and moved on. It wasn't something they felt they could talk about. So you ask a very broad question. and I think I've given you kind of specific little answers.
No, I mean, that really makes sense. I remember Judy Herman, who really helped put together the diagnosis of PTSD in psychiatry. And she said the central tension with PTSD is the tension between the urge to proclaim it out loud, the people who wanted to talk about it, and the urge to bury it. And that push-pull is inside each person, I think, as well as in our society, around our willingness to hear it and our not willingness to hear it. So it really makes sense what you're saying.
Thanks, Anne. That's Anne Hallward, who's joining me today for some reflections as New Maynard Speak comes to a close. I want to play you a song called Beautiful Rwanda. This is one that Dema Rugaba selected after one of his interviews with me, and I love it because it reminds me that healing is possible, which is another really important lesson I've learned from my guests over the years.
I was struck, I listened to the 100th show, and you, at that point, said that these two recurring themes echoed through so many of your interviews, courage and generosity. And I wanted to follow up on that now at number 250. I want to first ask you more about courage, because of course, courage is one response to trauma and torture. You've almost been in this like intensive school of courage, it seems to me, with your guests, each one of whom had remarkable courage just to even get here. What did you learn beyond the, I mean, I know courage is always contagious, right? Just being around courageous people makes us think like, okay, I can do this. But I'm going to ask you to take it even beyond that. What did you learn about how people access their courage from your guests? Because all of us need to find courage at different times in our life.
I love the word courage. I love that it comes from the word heart in French. And I think I thought I knew what it meant prior to meeting refugees and immigrants, asylum seekers, survivors of torture and rape. But I think I came to understand it in a different light with so many different stories. Oftentimes, I would remark that someone was particularly courageous or it was courageous to say something. And there was a lot of eschewing that and saying, it's not courage. I had no other choice. And I think that's probably pretty instructive. I know in my life when I've done hard things, sometimes it's because I tried a bunch of other things that didn't work and I was stuck and there was nowhere else to go. And then you just have to dig deep and push out of there. You know, you might not feel very courageous when you're 12 years old, you start middle school and you don't speak any English and you've come to the United States alone and all of a sudden you're in school and you're swamped. You don't feel courageous. You feel kind of destroyed. But then one day you're just like, I want to talk to somebody. I like what those girls are doing. I'm going to need this language. And so you dig deep, you know, and you pull out all the stops and you just go for it. There, I have talked to many people who have said they are by nature an introvert, but they just forced themselves to act like an extrovert for a while so that they could meet people and get established. Because as an introvert, if you feel like going home at the end of your day, you're not going to meet people and you're going to have a really small life, they felt. So I think courage isn't generally our first choice, but sometimes we're reduced to having to dig that deep. And people do a lot for love. I think parents come, and if they were alone and unmarried, they might not do something. But knowing that their children are watching them, they say, I'm going to figure this out. In fact, Nancy Kamaliz in her interview said she is not unpacking all this for herself. She's doing it for her future unborn children because she wants them to land into a world where she's sorted this out already. So for love, from the heart, where courage is from.
Thank you. I love that. That idea of courage is almost never our first choice. I love that. You arrive at having to be courageous, usually because of unfortunate circumstances. Yeah, thank you. That keeps it real. And do you find that, in fact, it has been contagious? Like, do you find when you have to summon up your courage that thinking of people like Nancy has been a kind of fuel for you that gives you strength?
Yes, I would say that it was my first thought in COVID when I felt a little bit desperate. News was unfurling very quickly and people were a little frantic and washing their mail and not leaving their house and not knowing what was going to happen with COVID, if it was the Black Plague or if it was the flu or nothing. We were all learning so fast and it felt overwhelming. And I thought, okay, I don't have any other American-born people that I can ask that are going to have a ton of insight for me. But I know some other people who've been through very hard things, and I'm going to ask them. And frequently I would have my hair on fire about some political thing, and my friends from Congo would say, oh, Kate, it's okay. It's going to work out. And where did they get that perspective? Everybody I knew had their hair on fire about it, and they were calm. They saw it with a different angle. And I think I did have a sense that I could get through a bigger thing out of my control from working with so many people who had adjusted their lives to things that were out of their control. And I would also say that I know that the lockdown factor of COVID reminded a lot of people about terrible times in their lives. Not only were they socially isolated, but some people have been in hiding. And so when you lock down in your house, you feel like you're in hiding again. And it re-triggered them with PTSD symptoms, and they were having panic attacks and whatnot, which is really getting back to the trauma conversation more than the courage conversation. But again, you're forced to do some deep work so that you can continue on.
I remember one of my guests telling me the feeling of courage is the feeling of fear. Mm. We glorify courage as if it's sort of like charging ahead, you know, on a white horse type of thing. But what it feels like inside is fear. Mm. And I just love that. It's fierce.
That's really good. I at one point in my life really wanted to have children, and it was taking kind of a long time, and I got kind of scared that maybe I would never be able to be a mother. And I found one thing that brought me solace was a little quote that just said, everything comes down to fear or hope. And so maybe from what you just said, maybe courage is when you're feeling scared and you choose the hope rather than the despair. We can't always affect the outcome, but we can affect how we're going to move from where we are.
Yeah. So courage is choosing hope, even when you're afraid.
Maybe. I mean, this is uncharted. It's not like I have notes here. I'm thinking about it out loud, yeah.
No, maybe that's very helpful. And choosing to move to the United States and risk everything with no resources and not having the language and not having a degree that will transfer, that's a radical hope.
Yes, it is.
Radical hope.
And for some, I want to say, not everyone chose to come here. When refugees are resettled, they're told where they're going, and they say, thank you for getting me out of this camp where it's 124 degrees on the soil. Yes, so that act of reestablishing oneself, letting go of being a doctor and becoming an ultrasonographer here, letting go of your master's degree in economics and going to English classes.
Even though you already speak six languages.
Yes.
That was one thing I didn't realize. It's like, how many languages on average do most New Mainers speak? Do you have any idea? I mean, to me, I don't think I've ever met someone who spoke fewer than four.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
I think the award winner in my show was Tarlan Amadov. I think he speaks seven.
Wow. Wow. Incredible. The average IQ of the whole state of Maine just went up because of New Mainers.
It just strikes me as crazy when people say anything disparaging about immigrants. I'm like, okay, lots of times they're way better educated. They're compassionate. They're hardworking. They're more likely to start a business. They want to be part of the team. And they bring things we've never thought of before. I often liken it to a garden or a salad. Want to have a salad with all cucumbers? No. Don't you want some tomatoes to come and some hot peppers and,
crumbled goat cheese?
Exactly. Throw some arugula in there. If you're just joining us, welcome. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. Today, I'm being interviewed by Anne Hallward, a Canadian-born psychiatrist and Gracie Award-winning host of Safe Space Radio at safespaceradio.com.
Would you say that learning from and listening to and befriending so many people from around the world has also taught you about your own kind of immersion in a culture of whiteness? And I'm curious to understand from you or to hear from you, what have you learned from people of color from around the world about what it's like to be here as a person of color? I mean, has it sort of opened your eyes to what it's like to not be white if you live in Maine?
I think in some ways I can speak to this, but I would like to point us in the direction of this clip, because I think Leila Hashi says it so beautifully in a little piece of interview from New Mainers Speak 234 that I did with her last summer. She was the commencement speaker at USM, and she had a conversation with her 94-year-old grandmother about being the commencement speaker. So let's listen to that, and then I'll go further into answering your question with her insights in there too, okay?
Is you feel scared because sometimes you feel as though you're not entitled to things because you're not born in this country. But a lot of people, they don't understand the dreams that you want, they're attainable. They're attainable. It doesn't matter if you're an immigrant. It doesn't matter if you're a citizen. Even for my grandmother, sometimes my grandma was shocked when I told her that I was the commencement speaker for my graduation, because she was like, oh, how can a black Muslim female be the commencement speaker? Isn't that position for people who are white, you know? And I told her, no. No, grandmother, it's not. Anybody can become the commencement speaker. You just have to put yourself out there. So my grandmother has this mentality. So imagine how many other people feel as though they're less deserving of things just because they're immigrants, or just because they're black, just because they're Muslim. You have to step away from these societal roles that we're all, pressured to fulfill.
like if everything goes perfectly over the next 5 or 10 years, where are we going to find you as a journalist?
Oh, wow. Definitely, I want to be on CNN. I want to be like the Anderson Cooper for like minority girls. I want to be the Don Lemon for Black people. I want to be on primetime TV with my hijab as a Muslim woman, talking about what's going on in America, being the one that breaks stories. I want to normalize that being a Black Muslim journalist is fine, and being on primetime TV with such a big network like CNN is you can do it. You can accomplish it.
Is she fantastic or what?
Yes, she is so fantastic.
So on one hand, I see that people like Layla are ready to embrace the opportunities that come their way, and I completely know she can do it. Can't wait to see her on CNN. But I am not blind to the racism that other people of color face here, sometimes on a really regular basis. Last summer, a guest named Antonio Haucha was telling me about how he took his baby and his dog for a walk and was pulled over by the police, who said he was reported as being someone who looked suspicious. And this kind of thing happens all the time, and a lot of us white people don't even know it's happening. So I am really deeply moved by the Black Lives Matter movement. I was actually pretty aware of race from a young age because my family moved from Metro DC to the Eastern Shore of Maryland, where there were very deep Black-White divisions. And that was a culture shock for me. Coming from a military family and a cosmopolitan community, and it was shocking to me even as a kid. You know, I was only 8, but I knew that the racism I was seeing unfold before me every day was very real. And then later in 1992, I had another kind of culture shock hitting the white estate. And it wasn't till later when we started having a lot more immigration, but yeah, through my guest experiences, I've learned quite a lot. And I want to move continuously toward more equity and justice for everyone's health and well-being. It's a social construct, and we can construct things differently to be more equitable. That being said, if anyone is so inspired and wants to start a show about race or cultural issues, you know, WMPG, it's 6 hours of training. It's all here for you.
You know, as I listened to your shows preparing for this conversation, I was filled with remorse that I hadn't listened to more over the years. And I was also filled with grief that it's coming to an end. Even listening to your 100th show, I got really sort of choked up about you stopping. And I respect your decision so much, but I am curious about how did you know it was time to end? Because it sounds like this has been the most enriching experience of your adult life in some ways, and the gift that kept giving to so many. I mean, it wasn't just for you, but for your listeners. And so what was it that made you know it was time to wind down?
Well, Viktor Frankl has a quote that I like a lot about being motivated to move toward your goals rather than away from your fears. I always knew that this show would not go on forever. So frequently throughout, I thought, when do I know when this is done? Would it be at 100? And now that I'm passing 150, is this it? 200? You know, what's the right number? And so my favorite number has always been 7. And when I noticed that my 250th show was falling on March 7th, which is the 7-year anniversary of my show, so I'm like, you know, that could be a message that this is it. And it felt right. It felt okay. In 2016, I was just about to wrap up. My life was getting busy with other things. And then Trump won. And I thought, nope, I'm not going to stop now. And I just figured I would know when it was time. You know, we have a new president. One thing I've learned through all of this is policy matters. You know, many of these people are coming to our country because of terrible policies in their countries. And we've seen erratic policy changes over the past 4 years. And we're seeing policies again changing immigration
opening back up. And that makes me feel hope and that I don't have to be here all the time doing that. Not like I'm changing the world. It just was something I could do. And as I said before, I started this when my children were home. And now they're both graduated from college. And so I find myself moving toward new things. You can have it all. You just can't have it all at once. And this has been a perfect fit for my life for this time. And now it is time for something else. And I think in a way, I've been inspired by so many of my guests who have started their own businesses. I don't know that I would have started my own business. It was never a goal of mine. But I find myself being an entrepreneur, starting my own business, and moving toward that.
Tell me about Thumbprint Audio. What is your business?
Thumbprint Audio is about interviewing individuals about their life stories and enduring hopes. Really, it's not a very different concept than New Mainers Speak. I'm going out and catching people's memories and stories on audio so that they can pass that along, the things they cherish the most. Not necessarily stuff, right? Songs, lessons, stories, descriptions of photographs, or even collected treasures that they hope to pass along. And because it's recorded on audio, you also get to hear the unique voice signature of the loved ones, because their accents and inflections and funny expressions just make such a unique timestamp, and it's the music of their voice. So many people, when I tell them my idea for this, they say, oh, my dad died, and I so wish I even had a recording on the answering machine of his voice, but I don't. And I just love the idea of being able to pass our voice along, like in a little time capsule or message in a bottle from one generation to the next. I have become a bit of a sound junkie in the past couple years, and I really love how the sound of our voice is the way that we're known to one another. It's like our face, and it's the way we reach out and communicate who we are and what we believe. It's how we connect. And so while it is a jump shift in my life from social work to more audio and oral history, so many of the skills are the same, and I'll bring those. And this spring, my website will launch thumbprintaudio.com into the world. So it's coming soon.
What a wonderful service. And then grandchildren can listen to the voice of their grandparents and learn about the necklace they got from my grandma. It's just beautiful, Kate. I love that.
If I can make this fly, that's pretty dreamy. More audio for the world.
Because with the podcast revolution, that's what the world needs, more audio.
Well, maybe I don't need to hear pontification, but I really do love to hear the laughter. You know, I was talking to a woman who's a personal historian, and a lot of the personal historians I know work in written material, and she is in audio. And she said she would go to conferences and people would trouble over how, when someone laughs during an interview, do you write that into the text? And she said, you don't. That's why you do audio, because you can't replicate laughter. It's unique. It's a thumbprint all of itself.
So when you think of Thumbprint Audio, are you in your mind thinking of that sort of individual signature of people's laugh?
Yeah, of their voices. We have a voice signature, just like our thumb is our individual signature.
What a treasure. So you're creating treasures with and for people.
That's the idea.
One of the things that I love about your show, Kate, is that unlike most interview shows that I've ever listened to, from Terry Gross, you know, to just to so many.
There's really only Terry Gross.
Really? You, unlike Terry, interview people of all ages. And I listened to a couple of your shows interviewing children that I loved. You have such a wonderful and easy way connecting with kids. And one of the things I learned from you, which I hadn't known before, is that in, I think it's Iraq, that there's a real tradition of children memorizing poetry. And I wondered if you wanted to play maybe one of the clips that you had of a child reciting poetry, a child from Iraq, because it was so beautiful.
Would
you be willing to do that?
It was one of the sweetest moments. And whenever I'm listening back to things and I come across this audio, I get almost a little weepy again. This is Ahmed Al-Mashakil. He's my friend Ali's son, eldest son. He has two sons. And truly, in that tradition, learning poetry is really important. And he's learning poetry in Arabic and in English. And he came with his dad for this interview. And he just shared this because he had memorized it. So now he has access to it in his heart anytime he wants. So that's the treasure of putting beautiful words in your mind and your heart. And this is Ahmed Al-Mashakil.
I tell you the names of the trees and the dialogue of the night crickets. I gave you the address of the distant stars. I registered you in the school of spring. I taught you the language of the birds, the alphabet of the river. I wrote your name on the notebook of the rain, on the sheets of snow, and on the pine cones. I tell you to talk to rabbits and foxes, to comb the spring lamb's wool. I showed you the unpublished letters of the birds. I gave you the maps of the summer and winter, so you could learn how the weeds grow, how the white chicks peep, how the fish marry, how milk comes out of the breast of the moon.
Thank you very much, Ahmed. This is by Nazar Al-Kapani.
Ahmed's now in high school. I don't know if he would do this today, but I am so happy I caught his voice on the tape.
It's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for having the kind of breadth of vision to value children's voices on your show, Kate.
Thank you. I have always worked with children or had children in my life. It's kind of another language, too. In a way, working and talking with children. And I love, love, love it. I'm actually missing it right now. I have very few children in my life right now. But I'm so happy that Delphia came on. She was one of the younger children on my show. Her mom was my first and last guest, Elise Malongi. And Delphia Wachiba came on there. Her older sister had already been on, Audrey. And I've had other children on too. The Regima boys are just flabbergastingly cool. You're going to want to hear this piece by Matthew and Manzi where they're talking about their lives. It's so cute.
And Matthew, what's something you've learned from Manzi? Something you really appreciate about him?
His comics. He's beginning to write comics. Like, he made a comic that's called Super Mom, and it's about our mom.
Because she's the best mom ever. How does she, and I'll make the comic about how she becomes the best mom ever.
Can I read it?
It's not done yet, though.
Can I see it when you're done?
Yep. It's gonna, I'm gonna do the drawings and he's gonna do the writing.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Like, you can make a animated picture of mom that looks exactly like mom, the beautiful mom. And then I'll write the things about her, like she's a princess, like from another world.
Matthew, what do you think it is that makes your mom so successful?
Keeping a happy attitude and supporting other people, which probably made them be like, yeah, I can do this. Now what can I do to help her back? And they kept on pushing each other to be greater.
If the whole world met her, she would be the most famous person in the world. And she would be loved by everybody.
Pretty much.
I have the best compliments ever.
That's beautiful.
They're so cute and loving boys.
Mm-hmm. She's the most lovable person in the world.
And aren't you lucky to get to spend time with her?
I love how Matthew and Manzi adore their mother.
I love that so much. I love their wholehearted, joyous love for her. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful to hear.
I feel that same wholehearted, joyous love when I walk into the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center, which is where I met their mom. And when I walk in, it's like my happy place. It's some of the coolest people in Portland, and they're all using the shared office space. And it's somebody's dream come true. And I can tell you that well before it ever existed, Alain Nahimana and I met, and he told me about his dream. And he invited his friend Dama Rugaba to come and talk with him. And so these men were talking about this dream they had to have a welcome center, a place where people can do the one-stop shop for language, for citizenship, for entrepreneurial support, for community. And they went ahead and they built it. And so we talked about it early on. It was coming together. Then we met again and they talked about their first year and the successes they were having. And it's a really beautiful temple to that kind of thing we were talking about before, that gratitude that makes you want to make it better for other people. And that is what that center was built to do. And they didn't do it with used furniture in the basement. They wanted real space. And they have a beautiful shared space up there where it seems like anything is possible.
This is a tribute to the Greater Portland Immigrant Welcome Center.
Ellen, would you be so kind as to introduce the song you've chosen for us for today's program, and maybe tell us a little bit about this artist and why you select Pata Pata?
Mariam Makeba is, we call her Mama Africa. She was a human rights activist and anti-apartheid activist in South Africa, and she really went throughout the world and bring the message of freedom and love. And I really love Mariam Makeba, and I wanted to share a song by her.
I did.
It's hard to imagine the world without him. I'm sorry that we lost him last summer.
And it's a terrible loss. Terrible. On so many levels. Still, it feels hard to believe. Yeah.
The work is being carried on. I understand that Reza Jalali is the new director. And
yes, that's so confidence-inspiring because Reza has so much to give and has such vision and has such a global perspective that I know their great work will continue despite this deep loss. Yeah.
I hope this is true.
Mm. So one of the things that you talk about on your show is, you know, all these different languages and how much you love these languages. But of course, music is the international language. And you do this beautiful thing at the end of every show. You ask all your guests to choose their song. And I confess that as a radio host myself, I was really jealous of that idea, Kate. I thought it was so brilliant because it's so inspiring and it gives you such a three-dimensional feeling for the themes that the guest has been talking to you about. So I love that you picked a song yourself for this, your last show. And I wondered if you would tell me about what you chose.
I would be happy to. I feel like I can't close when we're talking about music without also acknowledging the work of Abu Sila, who played the theme song for my show. I met him when I went to go see a drumming performance by one of my former guests. I love the tone that his Guinean music set at the beginning of each of my shows. It says something different is coming along here. So I am very grateful for the sophisticated music that Abu Sila afforded me at the beginning of every show. And my closing choice for the day. This is so hard. I didn't realize what a stressor this would be for all my guests. I see them trying to pick a song and really holding it to the last minute. And I did roughly the same thing. But I went back to my favorite artist, which is Carrie Newcomer. And this song is called You Can Do This Hard Thing. And it's a song that she sings about her father helping her learn to do hard things, her helping her own father get through hard things. And then it was reworked last summer, people singing it from all over the country with their masks on, getting through the hard thing of COVID. And it turns out we humans are incredibly resilient and we can do hard things. And I would like to share Carrie Newcomer's song with you.
Kate, thank you. That is the living example of so many of your guests, but also you creating this radio show out of nothing, like, wah, you know, that's a real adventure. And you launching your own business, inspired by so many entrepreneurs who are new Mainers. I'm about to listen to it, knowing that I'm going to be fed by it, as I have been by your show. And I want to thank you for New Mainer Speak.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be able to celebrate this integral part of my life. And I can't leave without saying thank you. Thank you to you. Thank you to the station. Thank you to WERU for rebroadcasting it. Thank you to all the kind listeners. Thank you so much to the guests. Thank you to the world for being receptive to New Mainer Speak. It's been nothing but a joy. And yeah, here we go. We can do this hard thing.
There at the table with my head in my hands, a column of numbers I just did not understand. You said add these together, carry the two. Now you can do this hard thing. You can do this hard thing. It's not easy, I know, but I believe that it's so. You can do this hard thing. At a cold winter station, breathing into our gloves, it would change me forever, leaving for God knows what. You carried my bags, you said I'll wait for you. You can do this hard thing. You can do this hard thing. It's not easy, I know, but I believe that it's so. You can do this hard. Late at night I called, and you answered the phone. The worst it had happened, and I did not want to be alone. You quietly listened, you said we'll see this through. You can do this hard thing. You can do this hard thing. It's not easy, I know, but I believe that it's so. You can do this hard thing. And pressed in hard times, hearts hung like a laundry on backyard clotheslines. Impossible just takes a little more time. From the muddy ground comes a green volunteer. In a place we thought barren, new life appears. Morning will come whistling some comforting tune for you. You can do this hard thing. You can do this hard thing. It's not easy, I know, but I believe that it's so. You can